Recovery On Air, the official podcast of Crossroads Addiction Rehabilitation. Candid discussion about addiction and recovery with the people who have lived it, along with input from experts on the journey from struggle to triumph. Laugh, cry, and be inspired. And now, your host for Recovery On Air, Greg Halverson.
Welcome to Recovery On Air, where we talk about all things recovery, the good, the bad, and the miracles. I'm Greg Halverson, your host today, and we've got Nick Baker with us.
Hi, Greg. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you're here, man.
Yeah, point that finger somewhere else with the miracle thing, man. That's crazy. It's just an honor to be here. Yeah.
I'm super glad you're here. We're both a little hyper when it comes to the energy level, so mm-hmm. We'll try to get that going over the airwaves here without it running amok. How long have you been in Phoenix?
So I've been in Phoenix. Let me see. I'm just kind of getting comfortable with the headphones.
Yeah,
and everything.
It's all right.
It's weird to hear my voice. Yeah. That's what I sound like to everybody. Oh man.
Yeah. See the whole Mesa thing when you tell people you're from
work.
Mesa. No, it
doesn't work. Yeah. Yeah. My girlfriend, like, sometimes she'll walk through the house and like accentuate the accent. Like, I'm like, I don't sound like that. And I'm sitting here right now. I'm like, shit, I sound like that. Okay. All right.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, all right. How long have I been in Phoenix for? Since, here we go, March of 2018.
There you go. Yep. There you go. Yep. And did you come out here for a reason?
Yeah. I got an unbelievable opportunity to go to a wonderful treatment center in Mesa, believe it or not. September, let me see. Like September, November, December 15th of 2017 is when I landed for the first time in Phoenix, went to this amazing treatment center called Evolution Way. My good friend Bob Schober and just all the staff over there was just amazing. From the second that I walked in the door and just kept looking at the airplanes, like, can you get me back on one? and they were like, you should just, you know, just breathe for a second, take a moment. Like, where are you going to go? You're going to run away?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
where was the connection between Boston, right?
Mm-hmm.
Boston.
Yeah.
And here, was that somebody that you knew? Somebody said, hey, we got a great place, or was it one of those geographics where they said, you need to go as far away from here as we can get you?
A little bit of both. It really was. It was some wonderful people, you know. So my journey into this whole thing is bigger than I can even imagine, right? So I got the opportunity to come out here through some friends that I did not know. My last detox that I was in, I had a roommate, and he passed away in the room with me. And then I get a phone call. My mother's picking me up from the treatment center that day, or the next day. And I get a phone call from this girl. And I'm like, listen, girlfriend, I'm like, I can't even get sober out here. I'm like, my roommate just died in my room with me last night. I'm like, I'm not going to make it. And she said, well, what was his name? And I'm like, I'd rather not say. Come to find out, she knows this guy really well, has volunteered with him. He built a foundation with another one of my friends, Amy Bush, back in Boston, does DMMF, which is now Resources for Recovery. And so these two built this whole amazing thing, right? And then so I say his name, and this woman ends up calling Amy, and she's like, oh my God, you'll never believe this. Like, we got to help this kid. And this guy's name, who I had only met once, ended up saving my life. You know, they put me on a plane, got me a full ride scholarship up to this treatment center, and it was just amazing.
Full ride. I love the way you use full ride scholarship.
Yeah, because I can't pay for anything.
From that meaning something completely different earlier in your life in sports, in football.
Yeah.
Saving your life.
My second full ride scholarship, I did the same as the first one. I blew it. I blew it. I got all the opportunities, all the wonderful people, you know.
And where was the first one to?
The University of the University of Rhode Island.
Rhode Island. Yeah. Okay. So what's their mascot?
They're the Rams.
You were going to be a Ram.
I was a Rhodey Ram.
You were. Yep. Is that what they call them?
Yep.
Rhode Island Ram.
URI.
All right.
Yeah, man. So it was...
Didn't work out?
No, it didn't work out, man. Yeah, just, shoot. What worked out was drugs and alcohol at that point. And my brother had ended up... my brother passed away June 14th of 2008. And I was going into my sophomore season at junior college, and then obviously got my scholarship to go to D1. And the broken heart caught up to me, right? And the amount of things that I needed to deal with, the pain that I was living with, increased. And that eventually I just walked right away from my full ride scholarship. The Oxys had me at that point, and they did a better job at dealing with the pain than I could, and just walked away.
Yeah. What was your introduction, as we hear so many times, on the meds? Did that start out with prescription?
Absolutely.
For
oxycodone.
What was the injury?
I had something with
neck. Do you remember?
Yeah. Because I created it.
I don't know. I went to the doctor and told him I had a hangnail.
Yeah. No, I had some vertebrae in my neck, my C3, C4.
Okay.
Some bulging discs and some pinched nerves. And I actually got my first prescription from my pediatrician.
Because you were how old?
I was 19. 18, yeah. 19. Yeah. Yeah. I was young. Yeah. I was just a baby. A guy who weighed me one day almost put me in my grave the next. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Wow.
Pretty crazy.
Okay. Yeah. So, your little bit of background, family,
mm-hmm.
brother, you said, I didn't know your brother passed away.
Yeah, 2008. Great family. Oh my God, I'm the only, I'm the outcast in my family. Like, my sister's successful, she's a nurse. My father is... he is a 33-year member of the Teamsters Union back home, provided just a wonderful childhood for me. My mom is a very successful businesswoman within construction and her verticals. Yeah, I got a great family, man. I got a really, really great family.
Well, and you
I got a little nephew too. He's my world.
Yeah.
He's my
Yeah,
little,
you got to coach
buddy.
Him.
Yeah.
You just went back there and you got to coach him a little.
That was one of those gifts that sobriety brings you.
Yep.
Yeah, and so cool. So cool that, like, the coaches brought me into the culture, and just getting to be with 12-year-old boys, like, it just brings innocence back to, you know, what we do for work.
Sure.
It can be overwhelming.
Sure.
You know, we're always optimistic, but we definitely see most of the times the worst of things with volunteering and with the population we work with, you know, people in recovery, people with suffering from homelessness, addiction, mental health. It's tough, but then you get with these like 12-year-old kids, and they're like, they got you singing Miley Cyrus again, and like life, is, you know, things are just simple, you know, and their little words are so simple.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Little bit of living vicariously, reliving your childhood when
so
you're
much.
Sitting there watching them play football, and you're like, oh my God,
yeah.
I remember this.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. So you came out here, you got into a program. Was it a 12-step based program? What kind of program did they have going on? How long were you there?
Oh, this scholarship only lasted 30 days. My last one had more promise.
Is that really a full ride scholarship? 30 days?
Yeah, man. It was just as expensive. I'll tell you.
Right?
That.
No
Crazy.
Doubt. No doubt.
But 12-step and just great, great models of people in life that are sober, that worked within this facility.
Like, peers.
Yeah, they just lived it. You know what I mean? They weren't like preachers. They weren't there out of a sense of duty. They were there out of a sense of love.
Right.
And a lot of the people that I know that went through during my time through that treatment center have obviously received that sense of love and have gone on to become very successful, owning their own businesses. And yeah, my graduating class was pretty cool. Like the year before me and the year after me, people have gone on to do some really amazing things.
That's what it's all about, right?
Yeah.
Giving people the chance to make a difference. And I know you are. Was there a reason that you stayed out here after that happened and didn't just turn around and go back home? Was it just out of fear of the relapse or?
Yeah, no, so I wanted to relapse, so I went back home.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well, so it worked out.
So
Nick doing his thing.
I did. I went back home, but the seed was planted, right? I went back home one more time because I had some, I came out here on probation and everything that people enter sobriety.
You were on probation?
Yeah, I had some some crimes in some different states, not even in Massachusetts, in another state.
Maybe in Rhode Island?
Vermont, out of all places. Yeah, Vermont. which is funny enough. Later in the story, I'll tell you how it all comes full circle. But, I'm forgetting my place. But, yeah, I went back home and tried to figure it out by myself one more time. And in like 4 weeks, I ended up back in a hospital room, and I begged my mother. I said, listen, come see me one more time. She showed up, and I was like, just get me a plane ticket back. I had really no roots here. I knew a couple people, but something was just like, go. So I packed everything in the trunk of my car. I shipped my car out here, and I landed, and I called the owner of my sober living that I was at previously. And I said, hey, I need a chance. We went and got coffee, and I'm dope sick sweating. And he's like, how you doing? I'm like, I'm all right. And this guy, Buddy Mello, man, at J&J Sober Living, I'm forever grateful. They gave me an opportunity and a place to lay my head for the next 14 days while I kicked fentanyl, which is unheard of, right? Guys showing that kind of love. And I came back, and I just got busy. Just started going to a lot of meetings and trying to not knowing what to do, so taking suggestions on what to do.
Well, and what a lot of people don't understand is staying busy, that's all we need to do sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Get out of our own head and quit thinking about the stuff that we think is going to take us back down the same road. Just stay busy.
Yeah.
And meetings will do that for you.
Yep.
I mean, good God, you go and listen to enough Alcoholics and Addicts speak at meetings. It will take your mind off of... off of a lot of other things that you think are horrible.
Yep.
Right. So you go back. You said you ended up in a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
In 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Back in a hospital.
Yeah. Yeah.
So bad. I mean, boom, back into the deep end, right where you came out of.
Yeah. I always tell my guys, I say, hey, listen, don't go out for a day. You know, that's a waste of time. Like, go until you figure it out.
Right.
You know, go until you're done, which is terrible to say nowadays. Because,
a waste of time.
You know, really, I heard a guy describe it one time. He said, you know, you're wasting good getting high time. That's terrible, man.
Does sound terrible.
Yeah,
yes.
Guys are dying. But until I got to that point where I realized that, like, I'm done and I'm broken and I need something else in my life, everything else was just an honest waste of time.
Right. You know, it's for me, it's really weird, not weird, but it's just different. I've been in Phoenix, Arizona my whole life, minus a few years in California as a kid. But getting sober here and watching everything occur that's occurred over the last 5-6 years with the opiates and then the fentanyl now, to hear, I can't even picture, like I picture geographically where Vermont and Rhode Island are, and I can't picture fentanyl making its way all the way up to the northern reaches of the East Coast up there. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
It's everywhere. And it's readily available everywhere.
Yeah, it's really terrible right now.
And this was what year that you went back there? And then
17, 18. So the beginning of 2018.
Okay.
Yeah, so I stayed in treatment for 30-something days, went home like maybe January, February area,
right.
60 days probably. Right. And then, I think February 15th, I landed. And then March 15th, I was back.
All right. Yeah. Well, hey, you know what? There you go.
Yeah.
You didn't want to deal with those winters back there. So, I mean, do you consider yourself lucky that you had a couple of years under your belt when COVID hit? Because COVID was tough on a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't looked at it like that. I've just kind of, overall, I just consider myself lucky.
Right.
You know, just.
I mean, so let me, okay, let's go at it a different way. Just imagine coming out here during COVID.
Meetings shut down.
No meetings. You're not hooked up with anybody. You know, three people, and those are all other guys early in sobriety that maybe you live with or something in a sober living. What did you do to get through when COVID hit and the meeting shut down and everything else? Being the person I know you are, you need people.
Yeah.
You're one of those guys.
Yeah.
What'd you do?
Oh, yeah. So in the context of how you're describing it, absolutely. Without the foundation built around and an understanding coming from service is where salvation lies.
Right.
Being of service to others is what's going to save me from myself. Yep. Yeah. Without enough meetings and enough opportunities to go be a service, when COVID hit, I probably would have been in trouble, right? And so COVID hit, and so I'm getting some things in life, right? I'm getting some opportunities and stuff. And And I'm back in the union. I'm working. I'm doing a couple things and volunteering a lot of my time, just giving back, whatever I can do. And my company tells me, you know what, hey, Nick, we're switching to night shift. And essentially what I heard was like, hey, Nick, we're taking away all your service commitments, right?
Right.
So I'm working for this company called Kiewit. They're doing the light rail extension. We just left the Terminal 3 over at the airport. We were doing a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm moving up in the ranks, you know?
Yeah, big company.
Guys are looking at me to become a foreman. I drive the truck. A lot of guys look to me for answers and stuff, and, you know, things are coming my way. And they hit me with, we're going to night shift. And immediately I thought, I got to leave.
Right.
Because I saw that I was going to get taken away from my home group on Sunday nights. My service commitment to Tuesday nights in the park was going to change.
Yep.
My H&Is were going to change everything. So that was like the real third step that I honestly took. And that was like 18, maybe 20 months into my sobriety. Because I was like, you know what? I have an understanding that to me, my higher power is one of service. And that's what I'm supposed to be. So I just need to abandon myself completely to what I understand him as, and just go be a service. So I walk away from my job, right? And they're like, I tell them why. My foreman ends up being a little bit in recovery.
Yeah.
And a little bit
in recovery.
We all know those guys that are.
He had his toe dipping in the water a little bit.
So he says, hey, Nick, you know what? You don't got to quit. We're going to lay you off, right? I said, fantastic, right? So I go to collect. I can't collect because I haven't worked enough.
Right,
It's okay because, like, COVID hits and then my unemployment kicks in.
Yeah.
And it was just like God was seeing where my heart was at, right? Because I had made that decision within myself that no matter what's going to happen from this, I'm leaving this job and I'm going to go fully into service. I'm starting my own foundation. I'm working with this one full time and it's just going to work out. And then it worked out that the world shut down. My paycheck started, and then I was honestly able to help go and serve people every single day of the week, you know, essentially, you know, getting paid for it.
Right.
I was receiving my unemployment.
Right.
And that was just kind of how God's always worked in my life. You know, I've always asked myself, you know what, before I make this decision, is it going to bring well-being to myself and others around me? You know, before I left Sober Living, before I go buy a new truck, before I go do anything, is it going to bring well-being to myself and others around me?
Yep.
And if it is, cool, make the move. If it's not, I got to kind of look at a few other things on why.
Review the motives. Review the motives.
So super grateful. So what I did during COVID was I doubled down on service. You know, me and my buddy Benny from Boston.
Yep.
You know Benny. We loaded up the Nissan Maxima that had airbags that were blowing out. And we would put hundreds of pounds of food and we'd go and have these little pop-ups. And man, I think we delivered. We got to serve like 30,000 pounds of peanut butter jelly sandwiches and food and within 3 months into COVID. And then we were like, we're not measuring shit anymore. It doesn't matter. Like, let's just keep helping.
We can only use 14 cups of peanut butter this time around. That's awesome. So when, how long have you been involved? I know, and I'm going to just let everybody know, Nick is all service. Everything he says, believe it. All I hear you do is service, service, service. And obviously you just got done saying, you know, you've been doing this from the get-go. How long have you been working with Aris?
Let me see. I had like 60 days sober. So coming up on 5 years.
So you've got a lot of time with them and you've been doing some really good stuff. We've been out with Aris a couple times there on Tuesdays out in Tempe.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is a little bit different. It's not just meals. It's not just hygiene. It's not just, they give dog food out. They give blankets. They give, they got a cotton candy machine.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Why
yeah.
not?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
A snow cone machine. Come on out and have a little dinner and keep that alive. How'd you meet Catherine?
So this guy, right? You know, that's how it always starts, right? That's how it always starts. A good story start like that, right? Hey, hold my beer. Or hey, there was this guy.
Isn't there a joke that says good stories never start out? So I got sober.
Yeah. Slow down, right? Yeah. So what did you just ask me?
Catherine.
Oh, my cactus mom. That is like she's Mother Teresa with a foul mouth. I love her.
Yes.
She's just my mom. She's just amazing. Yeah. I do not know where I would be without having met that woman. And how it came to be was a guy that I lived with in Sober Living volunteered with her. my buddy named Jason. And And I had community service hours to take care of.
Of course.
So not because I'm a great guy.
No, I'm still cleaning up the past.
Yeah. Because Vermont's calling and they want their hours, you know? And so I blow her off like, I'm living with this guy, right? And she usually comes and picks him up. So like, you know, I can't avoid her all the time.
Right.
And so she'd be like, when are you coming out? When are you coming to volunteer? And she must have hounded me for like 4 or 5 weeks. I'm like, I'll be there, right? Finally, the court system was like, we want our hours or you're going to jail.
Did they let you come here on probation or did you, they tell you to go away?
Yeah, now that it's all said and done, like time has lapsed. No, they said like you shouldn't leave the state of Massachusetts.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like we're going to let you go home, but don't go anywhere else. And so when I was in Arizona for treatment, I told them I was on vacation. My probation officer was like, really? Vacation? Why is this treatment center calling me? So I finally, awesome. I end up out there on my first Tuesday night after ducking Catherine for a minute, and I find my purpose and direction in life.
Yep.
And I've been sober for about 60 days. I didn't understand the steps. I wasn't really living them, right? I was just kind of, I was, my toe was in the water, right?
Yep.
But, that first Tuesday night that I showed up forever changed my life because up until that moment, I had slid so far down the scale, right, that my experience benefited nobody. I'm a blue-collar family. I'm in a blue-collar world. I don't know anybody that's ever got out of addiction, so I don't even really know what it looks like, right? You know, I don't know anybody that successfully made it out. And everything that I was doing back home was just a different level of desperation. So I find myself in this place where people are desperate, right, just like me. And in that moment, I went from needing all the help in the world to being able to provide it.
Yep.
And it was just like that.
Right.
It was a flick of the switch. And it filled my entire spirit. And I haven't left that park for like four and a half years.
Till Tempe Police, kind of got everybody to move on to another location. Still doing it. I love going out there. You guys, here's the crazy thing. I go out there on Tuesday. What you pull out of that little trailer and what gets set up in that parking lot is amazing that some people could get that organized.
Yeah.
You would not think that all of those tents and all of those tables and generators and machines and supplies
fits
in that trailer.
Well, you got to thank Michelle amazing. And Dustin for that. Yeah.
They, pretty amazing.
Yeah. She's incredible, right? She's very OCD. She likes to organize things.
So right.
And that's not my trailer. That's hers.
It is very
I have organized. The right to pull it, but once the door goes down, that's her world.
Why you guys do the tents wheels up, I still don't understand. It's probably safety, I guess.
I don't know. You have to ask her. Ask her tonight if you come on. Michelle, why do you do it like this? Yeah, but don't bring it in wheels down, man.
No. She'll tell you right off the bat. So a lot of people who are successful in their journey into sobriety, say exactly what you just did, which is finding their purpose. You know, they've gone through life searching in not the correct way, mm-hmm. right? You don't find it by getting loaded. That's usually not your journey to enlightenment. Although some people, you know, who was asking about peyote last
You? Is that you?
So anyways, but over and over and over, I hear people who, and whether it's working in sobriety, working in this world that we came from, it's people who say, I finally found my purpose. Mm-hmm. That is huge. There's lots of people out there, sober or not, addicts or not, alcoholics or not, who don't have a purpose in their life and they're just meandering their way through a very ordinary world.
Mm-hmm.
How blessed are you? You know what I mean? To have done this. I mean, a lot of people say, listen, I'm lucky that I'm an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm lucky that I found sobriety and I'm lucky because it's led to this.
Yep. Absolutely.
And people don't get it sometimes.
Yeah. That I hear a lot of guys say, I'm a grateful alcoholic. For sure.
Right?
That's my case.
Hey, I'm a grateful ex-football player. You know, I mean, is that really?
No.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think without purpose and direction, like you just said, whether you're an addict or not, alcoholic or not, there's not much. What are the words? there's something missing from life.
Yeah.
You know, there's something missing from life. And when it was missing from my life, I knew what I had to do in order to not kind of feel that pain and that detachment from what it is. Like, and that's service to others, right? I've heard the phrase, you haven't lived until you've done something for someone who can never repay you.
Right.
You know, like, that's the key to life, right? Is service. And it's just, it's being able to find your platform, like, whatever that looks like. I got friggin' lucky that I just showed up to do community service hours and found that homelessness was, like, and that was the key for me, right?
Yeah.
That was my key to unlocking whatever it is in the universe that God was trying to show me about myself, you know?
It takes you down another road. I wish everybody could have the opportunity to go out there and see. What does it say on the shirt?
Love them where they're at.
Love them where they're at. I've heard that in several different contexts, whether it's people talking about their children who are active in addiction. But with the homelessness, that's huge. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal. Most people think of homeless as that guy on the corner with a sign in their hand, right? Never mind the extra thought that it takes to go into, do they have a substance abuse problem? Do they have a mental health issue? Were they displaced? I talked to one person in the parking lot the last time I was out there with you guys, and she had lost her home mm-hmm. because she couldn't afford it. Plain and simple. She's living out of her car. She has a job. She just...
Yeah.
It's not always for the same reason, and it's not for the reason that most people think. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I watch Catherine walk around there and give them hugs and then turn around and tell them all to pull their pants up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? At the same time.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's great.
It's community.
It is community.
It's family, you know, and it's invoking that sense. Like, all of our volunteers, you know, you guys have been out there. Like, that's what we try to emit. Is like, let everybody know that this is just about love.
Right.
Everybody always asks, oh, what denomination are you? I'm like, we're love. Yeah. Well, what church are you with? No, we're just love, man. We're just here to love, and that's it. Because honestly, at the end of the day, each one of us is holding a sign, right? I was walking out of the gym one morning, and I saw one of my friends, because they're all my friends, right? Anybody that's sick and suffering is less fortunate, right? They're my friends because they are me. I've been at that place. I've been there. Right, and I see him writing his they call it flying a kite or flying a sign.
Yes, yeah.
Right, so he's writing his message out that day, and I started to think to myself, I'm like, dude, what does my sign say? You know, and it's always been the same for me. It's send me somebody to love. You know, seriously. And I went home that morning. I cried and I did like a little meditation. I put on Freddie Mercury, you know, Queen, send me somebody to love. Right. And I just got in the moment. I'm like, dude, that's my sign.
Yeah.
That's what my sign says. If we can all take a look in the mirror and see, okay, what is it that I need? That is what that person needs too.
Right.
You know, that is exactly what they need. You know, whatever insecurity you're dealing with, we're all human. You know, to think that somebody else doesn't carry it. You know, maybe because they don't express it, it's not true.
Right. And so you've talked about your own foundation.
Mm-hmm.
What's the name of that?
Lost Ones Found.
And what's the mission?
Our mission is to bring purpose, direction, and connection to those who continue to struggle with substance abuse. And no purpose, right? No purpose. So essentially what we want to do is just we're going to build a gym. We're going to build a gym, but our focal point around that gym is going to be a community of service,
right?
You know, because that's the most important thing. Sure. That is the most important thing. So what we'll have within this gym kind of wellness center is, you know, just a one-stop shop where it's, you know, we got the gym. We have some CrossFit classes. We got some yoga classes. We have a 12-step meeting, which we already started at the warehouse
at
the Aris
Foundation.
Yeah. And we're creating a service panel to get people plugged into different service opportunities, right? So now when I was in treatment, we went to LA Fitness, right? When I was in treatment, we went to some place, right, that... no one really spoke my language, right? And that's what we want to do. We want to bridge that gap. So whatever, you know, treatment centers are in the valley, you know, hey, listen, send them to a place where people actually speak their language. Right. After they've been in clinic all day, don't put them at EOS. Don't put them at LA Fitness. You know, bring them to a place where people are actually active in recovery.
Right.
You know, literally active. Because there's components to this whole life, but recovery especially, and it's mind, body, and soul.
Yep.
You know, there's different pieces that, you know, things are worked on for different times and blah, blah, blah. But the most important one is the soul work, right?
Right.
How do you work on your soul when you're writing down on paper all day about the things that you've done, right? Like, you know, I remember being in treatment talking about my war stories. This is what I stole this from my mother. I stole this from my nephew, right? Now, what actually shows us how beautiful we are?
Yeah.
You know, and that's service. Like, that's where you put yourself out there to go help somebody. And whatever they're trying to receive, you receive yourself.
Right.
You know, so that's what our gym looks like. And the platforms vary, right, from the ASPCA to I got a great buddy right now. He just got hooked up with Habitat for Humanity, Victor. You know Vic.
Yep.
Vic is now a team lead, and he's like our go-to guy, right? When we get this gym, we just want people in every place, right? So whatever your flavor is, because not everybody has the passion for homelessness, right?
Right.
Some people have a passion for Big Brother, Big Sister.
Sure.
Some people have a passion for animals. It's just it's letting them know once they come into this community that we're like Baskin and Robbins. You know, we'll call Charlie Forker and he'll get you set up with somebody somewhere. You
he
know,
will.
Connection.
He will.
Right?
He will. So speaking of that, so this is a snowball effect. That's the picture I'm getting of everything that you've done, right? And a lot of people know networking is such an almost 80s term, right? It started way back. Oh, I got a network. Networking is the big thing, right? But in the world of recovery, networking is huge. And I have a favorite story about somebody who's very prominent and famous and movie star and all this other stuff. And his lesson is that every time he said yes, another door opened. That's the picture I'm getting of what's occurred with you.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're able to give that opportunity for other people to come and walk through a few doors here and there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's Tuesday night in a nutshell. You know, anybody that I get to work with, I get the privilege to kind of come in contact with, whether they be in the program or not, in recovery or not. It's like, hey, come on down to Tuesday night, you know, because I feel like it's what we're all missing in this world. You know, it's just an opportunity to go and show what kind of love we have to give.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Simple. Just, yeah.
Yep. Simple.
Yeah.
Simple.
It's simple.
It's simple. You just got to do something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Greg Halverson here on Recovery On Air. Just reminding everybody that we're here speaking with Nick Baca.
I'm gonna
say it just like you would say it back then. You haven't come on the wrong channel. You are still in Arizona.
Yes.
And if you want to reach out to Crossroads, of course, it's thecrossroadsinc.org. Don't forget about that. I always forget about the sales part of this. You know, I got to get those little
pictures. Well, it's because you're so pure-hearted.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
So what do you – you going to stay out here? Has it ever come into your head that, hey, I'm solid. I got a solid program. I don't see myself going back. Can I take this back and show – I mean, does that ever come – does the East Coast, does Massachusetts ever pull you back?
Yeah. You know, that's where all my family is. Well, yeah, that's where my mother, all my cousins, my nephew especially, that's where a big part of my family is, but there's also a big part of my family that's here now. You know, so, I've thought about it, but if I were to honestly do that, I would be running in the opposite direction of where God's been trying to bring me my entire life.
Yeah.
Yep. And I had that realization not too long ago. It's like, No, you've been looking for a place to call home for a long time. Like, this feels like home.
Right.
You know, this is my place.
Right.
This is where this is home.
So in the middle of any of the past five summers that you've been here, you haven't gone, why? Why did you direct me to the hottest, most godforsaken place in the desert?
It's a purification process.
I mean, you're
right?
Coming from quite a different climate. Uh-huh. You know, it always blows me away how much Arizona and how much Phoenix, in particular, is growing. But with that growth, it's not all just that. It's not just the population explosion. Good is there also, mm-hmm. right? It's not just crowding. It's not just the high rent and all these other things that are occurring to us right now. There's a lot of other opportunities out there that are coming along with it because of people like yourself.
And that's wild to hear. That is wild to hear.
Just saying, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Humbling to hear.
Well, what would be going on Tuesday nights if Catherine hadn't met you? If somebody else in your with the opportunity to do what you're doing, and somebody would have said, "Yeah, no."
Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
wow. Ripple effect.
Yes.
It's the ripple effect.
Yep.
And I think it's awesome. How many meals you guys serve out there every Tuesday? On average?
Anywhere from 150 to 200.
It's a lot of meals. Kids, families,
everybody. Haircuts, popcorn. Yeah, whatever.
Haircuts.
Yeah, we'll have haircuts tonight. Yeah.
Haircuts.
Yeah.
Dogs.
Yep.
Cats. I saw a cat. A little girl was walking through the line last time. Yeah. She had a little kitten.
I know.
And I was like, oh, man. That just kills me. It does. It's just one of those things I have to get over with because I feel sorry for the animals.
Yeah.
But and at the same time, I got to take pictures with this little puppy dog.
Yeah.
His name is Gnarls.
The little one?
Gnarls. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's one of the cool things, right? So our little JC, who started taking care of all the dogs when she was 15, she came home for a school project. And that was her passion. She wanted to take care of the animals out there. And that has just taken on a whole life of its own. Now half of the warehouse that we have is full of dog food, right? But it's her purpose, right? It's her passion. Yeah. She's like, you know what? Someone needs to take care of these dogs. Yeah. Like that's what that platform is on Tuesday night. It's like, just show up here and you'll find whatever it is you're supposed to bring. You know, guys all the time like, hey, Nick, what am I supposed to bring? I said, two hands, man. Yeah. Two hands, 2 feet. Yeah. Just
and,
show up.
And whatever else is a bonus.
Yeah. Because you will walk away with something that you can't put into words. And you'll know exactly what to bring next week.
Right. 50 pizzas from Costco.
Four buses bringing people in. Yeah. Yeah. Crossroads is awesome.
Gotta love those. Gotta love those. So cool. The Costco pizzas. I mean, what better way?
I've never had one. I've never had a slice of Costco pizza.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Yeah, I got to have one.
Well, you're running around out there doing too much if you haven't tried a little bit. So outside of all the service, what does Nick do for Nick? I get that service does this, right? It is. I love service work. I wish I was one of those guys who could really put it to and make it all work to be my everything. Mm-hmm. It's kind of fallen into that category now. Now my new role at Crossroads, but we got to take care of ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So what does Nick do? What does Nick give us a little insight into what Nick, when no one else is around? I'm not feeding somebody. Mm-hmm. I'm not pitching new ideas with somebody. I'm not forming a new organization. What's Nick do?
Yeah. You know, it's funny enough is last week I work out of town a lot, so I'm always driving. So I got a ton of screen time, ton of window time, windshield time. And it hit me because I've been struggling lately because my life is always one side of the pendulum, right? Just service out the door. And it hit me. It's like, oh, man, I'm lost. I'm lost again. I'm lost in a good way, though, this time, because last time I was lost, I had no sense of direction. I had no sense of God in my life. Drugs just had me. And I was like, I was in the dark and I was lost, right?
Yeah.
Nowadays, when I was driving up there, I'm like, man, I've been off lately. I've written all the inventory. I've helped all the people. What is going on? And it hit me. It's just because I'm growing into a greater purpose. You know, so what do I got to do for me right now? What do I do for me is give myself more hugs. Give myself more hugs. Give myself time to just be in solitude and be with me. Start to look at the things that growing up, were institutionalized within me, and that is I am, and this has nothing to do with my family, it's just something I grew up within my society, right?
Sure.
That I am worthy, that I am not wrong, that I can trust myself, and that I am safe. Like, these are these are four major things. I just had an experience last Friday, a couple Fridays ago, where through some digging, I found that, like, wow, man, these are still core pieces of myself that I believe. I believe that I can't trust myself. I believe that I'm not safe with myself. I believe that I'm not worthy of love. And, you know, I believe these things. And how do you now, you know, you see them, right? Now, how do you practically go about healing them? And that's my journey here today, is like speaking that truth, is being, is living it. But it's getting home, and it's just being, you know, finding a moment to just be, you know, look at, say, what do I need to do for myself today? Because I already know how to do for others. Like, that's something that's been God-given, right? I can just...
Yep. I think you're pretty good at that.
Yeah, it'll just happen. I don't even... It's like a manifest in my life. And now it's like I got to manifest the moments of taking care of me.
I mean, are you ever just sitting there and you go, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to get that half gallon of ice cream.
No, I do. I do. I do. But I figured out that I'm like lactose. You know? But here's the sick part of me. Like, I'll still go get the freaking ice cream. And then,
that doesn't sound normal.
Yeah. So, find those little things. And those little things to me lately look like just love.
You know, it's funny because whenever I'll try and get a hold of you, I've, you know, a couple of our phone calls, oh, yeah, I'm just leaving Payson. And I'm like, that lucky SOB.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love that drive.
Yeah.
I get up and I do that on a whim. That's nothing to me, just that 1 hour drive, but I love driving up to Payson. Mm-hmm. I know every turn of that road. I know every pothole. I know what places are, you know, but I love it because I still find myself looking around.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of my therapy, is getting outside of what I do. And part of my balance in my life is the outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
And going up there is, to me, for an hour, driving each way, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours, and then getting to a place where you're looking around going, wow, nobody. So I'm like, mm-hmm. that bastard, he gets to drive up to Payson for work?
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me?
There's that mile marker, right? Right when you come around the, it's like mile marker 284. That's when I roll down the windows and you just smell the pines.
Yep.
And it's like, ah, oh, man.
Right.
Yeah. Right. I've reached the mountain.
Right after you come up the hill out of Rye.
Yeah. You've hit it. You've crested the hill, and you're coming around, and you're about to roll past Jim Jones shooting range.
Jim Jones.
Yeah.
I love that.
So
don't
yeah.
you love that sign?
Yeah. It's
Jim Jones.
Yeah.
It's shooting range.
That's the guy who did all that crazy stuff in South America.
Yeah. That's why I think it's hilarious. Jim Jones shooting range.
Yeah. But that's you know, it's finding, it's like you said, getting outside, man. Because I am the sunrise. I am as the sun sets. Like, that's what one of my favorite phrases. It's just because it's true to me. Like, you'll see the Arizona skies out here, and it's like you can wear them, you know. And if I don't take that moment, so the moment that I realized how bad drugs and alcohol screwed me up, I was at Sky Harbor, and I was in 120 degree heat with jet blast coming at me, right? And I'm chiseling concrete off a sewer cap, and I was like, damn. Damn, I did. I messed up. And, right? But what would get me through those extremely hot, difficult days out there is while everybody else was working, we would work 4 to 2, 10-hour days, the sun would come up over the airport, and you would see it over the superstitions, and I'd stop whatever I was doing, and I would just be in that moment, and that's what filled my soul. And it's funny how life gets busy, and you kind of get away from that. But when you're really going through something within growth, it's so important to find those moments to sit back in. Because, like, I could have quit 100 times on that job site, and I did. But it was that moment that I got in the morning that pushed me through the day.
Right.
You know, and I'm right there because I'm lost again. And I'm like, all right, which direction do I go with the Aris Foundation? Which direction do I go with this? You know, I got a couple other things I want to do. I want to coach. I want to be involved with kids. You know, my mind gets squirrely.
Sure.
And then it's like, no, just go be. Just go be with the sunset. Yeah. Just go be with the sunrise, and everything else will just bring you to where you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. I have, you just said that and an idea popped in my head. So don't let me forget when we're done.
Oh, dude, you're telling the wrong guy. Tell the wrong guy. Tell her.
Don't forget. What? Hold yeah. on.
You better write it down.
I'll write it down on my little yeah. prompt paper here. I got somebody. See, this all happens. This is why it happens. I got somebody I want to connect you to, who works with. He's a coach, and he does. I'm going to write it down right now.
Love it.
So I don't forget. What do you see in the next? Do you look forward at all? Are you a planner? Are you one of those guys who goes, in 5 years I want to be doing this? Or are you like quite literally, I know a lot of people in recovery who go, why? Why would I do that? Yeah, do I have goals? Sure. But living in the moment to some people is that it.
Yep.
Living in the moment, and what happens happens, and I hope things grow. I hope things get better, but.
Yeah, that's, you know, I'm still at the point in my sobriety where I still have to pull myself out of the past and out of the future.
Yeah.
You know, I some days I still, just my mental state still kind of ruminates on things that have happened that I got no control over, or, you know, where I want to be financially in, you know, 6 months, 9 months, and what I want to do. But yeah, just like you said, it's letting go.
Yeah.
It's really letting go. That's when the grace of God truly works, is when you just let go. Like, let go of even what you think you know, right? Because, like, there's nothing to gain here. You know, there's really nothing to gain. Anything that I thought I was trying to go for, whether it was knowledge in some philosophical books or, like, what I get to do on Tuesday night, man, there's nothing to, like, go and physically gain. You
right.
know, just go and be present with people.
Yep.
Go and enjoy, like, call you in the morning and just knock on your door and say, hey, Greg, how you doing today, man? Cool. All right. Just want to say I love you, man. Yeah. Hope you have a great day. Like, that's where I'm trying to get to be, is just realizing and fully realizing how lucky I am for all the beautiful people I have in my life. Because sometimes I look at them like, goddamn things I got to check off out of boxes. You know, I really do. I'm like, shoot, right. I got the park today. I got this today. I got that today. And how far it takes me from just being present with love.
Yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, you know, I have, that's where I'm looking to be, because I know when I reach that moment, all the other materialistic shit will be there.
Yep.
You know, I have a true feeling that once I am truly grateful for everything I already have, I will receive everything I desire.
Right.
You know?
Well, what's the saying? If you're not grateful now, what makes you think you'll be any happier with more?
That's the greatest thing I've ever heard you say.
Seriously.
Yes. Yeah.
I just reached a new pinnacle.
Yeah.
Okay. Man. Real quick. I got more of those.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I love
them. But that's the gist of it, right? Mm-hmm. People, I mean, we live in that kind of world, and that's unfortunate sometimes. All right, we're going to get down and dirty here, the end of this deal. Five questions everyone is asked.
Mm-hmm.
First question, do you have a tattoo? And if so, where?
Yes, I have a tattoo on my back, my left shoulder blade, and it is for my brother who passed away.
Awesome.
Yep.
Awesome. What is the proudest moment of your life?
Proudest moment of my life. Proudest moment of my life. Let's circle back to that one.
Okay. You're not married.
No.
So you're safe there. The last two that I did this with, one of them I had to remind.
Not yet. I love you, Michelle.
I said, don't forget, you're married. You just got married, dude. And he's like, oh, yeah. What is the most embarrassing thing you've ever said to anyone?
Most embarrassing thing I've ever said to anyone? Holy smokes. Probably... let me see. Most embarrassing. Gosh, I don't know, man.
There's
just
so
everything
many.
That comes out of my mouth.
There's so many.
Yeah, man. Like, how do I narrow that shit down?
You don't have a memory of, like, really just.
Oh, well, I do it so often. It's definitely something I've said to my girlfriend. You know, yeah.
All right,
because she'll look at me like, "What?"
We'll take phone calls
Michelle.
Next time and ask,
ask Michelle,
next time. I'll ask her tonight.
Yeah.
I'll ask her tonight.
She'll
be there,
dumb
right?
Stuff. Yeah.
Okay, if you could disappear for 2 weeks, where would you go?
Hawaii or like Thailand.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh no, you know what? What's that little place? My girlfriend's been there, Bali.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Something like that.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Some just island out in the middle of the ocean and just
chilling.
Just chilling. Okay, you might run into Snoop Dogg with a Corona Slim in his hand. Yes,
those are named after him. Slim can. The Slim can, bro.
If you had one wish, what would it be?
I wish that everybody would get an opportunity to serve on a Tuesday night. Yep. Yeah, that would change the world.
Yeah?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
It would. Everybody does have the opportunity.
Yep.
They just don't.
It's bringing more awareness.
The opportunity.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. The opportunities are always there.
Mm-hmm.
We all have opportunities. Anybody who's out there who says, I didn't know, that's a bunch of bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
I think. You see it on TV, you hear it on the radio, you know somebody. The opportunities are there, but people just don't take the time out for them.
Mm.
Probably don't know how empowering it is.
Mm.
Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, that's a good wish.
Yeah.
Nick, thank you so much for coming out in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
I didn't even promise you lunch or anything.
No.
And
Charlie Forka does. And, he's always eating. I'm going wherever Charlie's
another
going.
Another freaking Charlie.
He's
okay.
Always eating.
Yeah. He knows all the good places.
He does.
You know, I came here and he came here with somebody and I said, are you here yet? I was downstairs and he says, no. He's over in the diner of that hotel that you pointed out where, you know, we were making jokes about those hotels. And yeah. That's where he's eating.
It's awesome.
And it was like, come on, dude. I know you can do this. Thank you for coming out. Thank you for everything that you do. I wish the best for everything that you're attempting and going for and shooting for. And don't forget, you know, you aim for the moon, you still end up with the stars.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank you so much for sharing your gift with me and bringing me into a place like this. I've never been welcome in places like this. I see all these TVs. I'm like having flashbacks of like, oh man, look at all these TVs. This is good
enough.
It's
not a security
room.
This
is a week long here.
It's not the security room.
No, but thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for all your grace.
Absolutely. Thank you. And don't forget, everybody, if you need help, reach out, talk to somebody, call, look us up, thecrossroadsincinc.org, and all of our resources are listed there. And I wish everybody the best. Have a great day.
Yeah, and if you're in Tempe on a Tuesday night, come and check out the Aris Foundation.
Yes, at Aris. McClintock and Broadway.
Yep, at Mountain Park Health and what's it called? TheArisFoundation.com. We're on Facebook, The Aris Foundation.
Yeah.
Yeah, come and see what a Tuesday looks like.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Recovery On Air, the official podcast of Crossroads Addiction Rehabilitation, with your host, Greg Halverson. Join us next time as we continue our candid discussions about addiction and recovery. Listen 24/7 anytime to this or any of our shows online at starworldwidenetworks.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.